next up, we have Catwoman with Crystal.
Catwoman, it's... I'm going to get Richo to do that name again, because...
Catwoman is written by Judd Winnick and drawn by Guillem March.
Guillem
March, is it?
Because he's Spanish.
Sorry, Guillem March. I do apologise, Guillem.
Okay, there's been a lot of controversy about the Catwoman book. It's very obviously geared towards those who appreciate the female form. But having said that, I've never read Catwoman before, but I obviously know about her from popular media and, you know, movies and whatnot. And so it was nothing I didn't expect from Catwoman. Catwoman has always been portrayed in the popular media as sexy and sultry, and that's what you get in this book. I'll come back to that in a minute. But putting that aside, because that's what I expected, the first thing I noticed was that she's not very friendly to the cats. She's forced all the cats into one cat cage with bits of cats hanging out the side. That's
obviously not RSPCA friendly.
Correct.
Oh, and you can tell which of us here is the big cat owner, can't you?
Once again, putting aside the sexiness of it, the story was a lot easier to follow than the other two books I've spoken about. I thought the character, without the pictures, was introduced well. But then the story gets very boring. By about halfway through the book, I was incredibly bored, and by the time we got to the controversial end scene, I just didn't care. I was like, whatever. I didn't care at all. I wasn't offended by this book, because that's nothing that I didn't expect. The first few panels, you don't see Catwoman's face. You just see various voluptuous parts of her body in states of dress and undress. It's aimed towards a specific audience, and it would please that specific audience. Didn't please me, and I won't be reading it after this. I give it 1.5 licks.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the opening bits. Why is the first two pages Catwoman getting dressed? I mean, she's getting dressed into a suit hurriedly because there's people attacking her, but why do you not see her full face for the first two pages, but yet you do get to see quite a lot of boob and butt shots? Yes. I mean, it desensitizes you to the sexual nature of the drawings, and I find it offensive. I've got nothing against cheesecake. I mean, it's fine. A little bit of TNA, depending on the comic or the situation, okay. It's the world we live in, so that's fine. But to have just her body and not even establish her as a person, I mean, it's basically she's just a body. I find that unnecessary, and it's insulting.
It provides a nice contrast to what we were talking about earlier in relation to Batwoman.
Yeah.
In the Batwoman scene, when they're changing into their costumes, they're actually... it's a longer shot.
Yep.
And there's some sort of stuff between the audience and them getting changed. You know, their backs are to us. You know, you see their full figures. There's nothing gratuitous about it. Nothing, ooh, look at them, they're sexy.
And they've established who they are as
exactly
personas
right.
before.
Whereas yeah. this scene is really, really, these first few pages are, oh, look, here's Catwoman's breasts.
Yeah.
Look, here's Catwoman's butt.
And like Crystal
look,
said, like
even,
Crystal
when she,
said,
even when you yeah. finally see her and she's leaping out the window on
yeah.
page two, she's still got one of her breasts hanging out.
Yeah, which indicates that she's half-dressed because she was in a rush.
Yeah. Yeah.
But why is that necessary to have her boob hanging out?
Yeah, this is actually titillation.
It's titillation for no
sad and sad and pathetic more than anything else.
Yeah,
well,
and
I totally agree with all that. Once again, I didn't expect anything different from Catwoman.
Well, Catwoman in the past, like you said, in my popular media, is shown as, voluptuous and sexy and stuff like that. Not in every incarnation, but clearly in the Jim Ballant type era and all
yeah,
this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that was terrible, terrible stuff, and thank God we eventually got past that. But just prior to this, Catwoman was excellently portrayed as a sexy, confident woman who did what she wanted, when she wanted, but it still wasn't falling out of her costume every
yeah.
5 seconds.
Well, having said that, that's what I expected from Catwoman. It doesn't mean that justifies it.
Yeah.
I mean,
which means I wasn't shocked.
Yeah.
Julie Newmar in
the Adam West.
Adam West Batman TV show. Sexy. Fully clothed at all times. Mm. You know, it's just yeah. it's not hard to do that.
You can be sexy without being gratuitous.
That's exactly right.
I totally agree.
Yeah. And then, so I mean, in terms of the actual story itself, I mean, yeah, that's fine. I mean, I'm of two minds of her friend. I mean, her friend is portrayed as, you know, like a natural woman, you know, a full figured. I don't know how you describe it.
An ordinary person.
An ordinary person. I don't know if that is. I don't know. I'm two minds about that. I mean, did they do that because Catwoman herself is so sexy, and so they had to contrast, or is it meant to be respectful, or did they do it to try and be funny? I don't know. I'm moving on from that because I don't really have a clearly defined point.
Well, look, if they're doing it as a contrast to Catwoman, then I think that just actually makes it worse.
Because that means
they know exactly how they're portraying Catwoman. And so they thought, oh, well, we better do some sort of contrast to try and, allay some of the criticism we're going
to
get.
I totally agree. And the artwork is kind of pedestrian, actually, to be honest with you. I mean, it tries very hard to be stylish. It even has a very Batwoman-ish sort of look with the porcelain skin and the red hair and stuff like that. I don't really know why that is. It really doesn't work for me. I mean, it's very stretched and drawn out and stuff. I did like the art in the scene where she beats the guy half to death in the toilets. I thought that was pretty cool. But other than that, the rest of it, very, very pointless. And, of course, that brings us to the final sequence.
There's another point I forgot to bring up, because she's eavesdropping in the club and she's in her disguise. And then the next minute she's in full costume. But where did that come from?
Well, she does say in that sequence that she can't escape looking, because they found the other waitress, that she can't escape looking like her now. So now she'll just make a statement and escape as Catwoman.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
But where did the costume suddenly come from? Did she have it packed in a little bag?
She had it hidden
obvious. In one panel, she's one way, the next panel, she's another way.
Yeah, so fair enough. Although, that's a very good point. She managed to change in her costume super, super quick without anything hanging out. Whereas in the first couple of pages, it's all over the place.
Life depends on it.
So, that's exactly right. So we get to the end bit. Now, I mean, spoiler alert, I mean, it is all over the internet. So, if you're not too sure about it by now, then please skip ahead when you hear the beep. Beep. Okay, so
leave your message now.
The end sequence. I've got no problem with Catwoman and Batman having sex. I've got no problem with it. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that they have in the past, in pre-reboot version. My only problem with it is, does it have to be so gratuitous? I mean, it's just, it doesn't, the end panel doesn't show us anything that we needed to see. A lot of people have said that it shows penetration. I don't see that, personally. I mean, to me, it looks like the bottom of her suit is still on. Take it as you will. But it's still really not necessary. And Batman losing control that way. I mean, at one point, Catwoman flips him onto his back and stuff. Sorry. That's just not going to happen. If he didn't want... he says no a couple of times, and I'll get to that in a second. He says no a couple of times, and as she says, puts up a bit of a fight. If he really didn't want to do it, he would very easily not do it. So he clearly wants to do it. And this whole saying no, but actually meaning yes... They flip it on its head by having the guy do that. I find that even more offensive than the start. So, there's once again this whole no, you know, but I really, really want
to
do it. It's
annoying. I totally missed that. Because by that point in the book, I just didn't care. I probably actually didn't even read the last scene. I totally missed that.
So, anything good this comic would have had is totally destroyed by what these things did. So, I mean, Red Hood and the Outlaws at least had, for me, an entertaining first three pages. This had nothing. I mean, the bit where she beats up the guy isn't that good that I'm willing to give this a score because of that. So, I don't know. I was going to give it zero, but maybe half a Luke. I don't know. Half a Luke, zero. You be the judge.
I'd like to, having you pointed that out, I'd like to revise my rating and give it a 0.5 Lukes.
Excellent. You guys?
Well, honestly, this book is everything that is wrong with modern comic books. It is awful from start to finish. It opens with a scene which is basically designed to go, ooh, look at Catwoman's breasts. Then she's given a mission so that she can go to a bar so that we can go, ooh, look at Catwoman's breasts. Then she hooks up with Batman in the end so we can go, ooh, look at Catwoman's breasts. There is no characterization in this book at all. The only thing we learn about Catwoman is that she likes to have sex with Batman and that her breasts hang out a lot. I mean, it's just, it is terrible. The characterization, I can't even call it shallow because it is just non-existent. The story is pointless. Like I said, every scene seems designed purely to show off Catwoman in some kind of gratuitously drawn sexual pose. And I've got to say, the artwork is ugly. In fact, it's one of the ugliest books in the relaunch. I don't think March is a good artist at all. He's a terrible storyteller. Sense of anatomy is awful. His sense of perspective is awful. He sets no mood whatsoever. This is without a doubt the single worst comic produced by, not just part of this reboot, but the single worst comic I've seen produced by DC in a very long time. And giving it zero Lukes is being too kind to it. This is just pathetic.
Wow. Luke, Catwoman, when done well, should be a combination of a Sarah Perowski V.I. Wachowski novel and Modesty Blaze. So, you know, tough, you know, street-level crime combined with glamour, high-class world adventuring. And this book is neither. I'm not going to repeat ad nauseum what we've said about the gratuitous nature about the way that she's been portrayed and illustrated. Suffice to say, I agree with what we've said. It is completely unnecessary and offensive. The plot is all over the shop. There is no clear relationship between one scene going on to the next. The scene where she meets her friend, you could have cut out completely, had her standing on a rooftop somewhere going, I need money, where's the best place for me to do it? Finds out the Russians are in town, infiltrates the bar, becomes a bartender that way. You didn't need the two or three pages of her friend to give her, it's Catwoman for God's sake, you know, she could have gone and spoken to Barbara about, you know, hot spots to go and check out for her to go and make some money.
Or just had like a police scanner radio thing.
There are a dozen different ways that you could have shown that Catwoman was competent in what she did by having her choose the target. Mm. Instead, they introduce what I'm assuming is going to be the supporting cast member in the book, and then just have her tell Catwoman, which makes Catwoman look bad again.
And it makes her look bad, it makes her look selfish. So they've tracked her down at her apartment, they've blown it up, so they've shown that they're not worried about collateral damage. So if they know enough to know where she lives, that means they know her secret identity.
Yeah.
So then surely they know her associates.
Yep.
So she's then gone to her friend's house. I mean, any mercenary or assassin worth their salt would have been staking.
They would have gone there first.
It's just insane.
And taken out the associate before they would have gone after the main target. But then she goes to the bar, and spoiler alert, but really, I don't care about this book. Spoiler alert now. Goes to the bar under the assumption we've been told that she's going there for a specific purpose. But then she's just tending bar and overhears snippets of conversation and then goes to something that she finds interesting.
And don't forget, takes her top off along the way as well, just for good measure.
But then points out that, you know, points out that she doesn't want to become a showgirl for the reasons that why we hate the comic.
So you give it a snippet of her past where she sees that guy that she remembers.
But see, and that's sort of what I'm talking about. It's sort of ad nauseum, we need to throw in as much stuff as we can, but no cohesiveness. So he just turns up, he just happens to be there.
Yeah.
We get a snippet about her past, she beats the guy to death, but there's no repercussion in this issue or remorse. And then she goes off and then has sex with Batman at the end in a completely unnecessary scene that does neither character justice.
Yep.
Well, the relationship between Catwoman and Batman has always worked on the idea of a certain level of sexual tension between them.
Yep.
Now, whether or not they've had sex in the past or not has never really been sort of implicitly stated or shown. But it was always sexual tension and the idea that they want to do it but can't or don't, or, you know, they feel this need but they're better than that, has made their relationship a really interesting one for 70 years. Mm. And now they've just completely thrown that away. And as you say, made both characters look bad and look kind of sad more than anything else in one pointless scene that is clearly just done for shock value to try and go, ooh, look at what we're doing in Catwoman. Isn't it edgy? Yeah. No, it's sad. It's sad and pathetic. It's not edgy at all.
It's also just worse. It's rated T plus. So it's rated 16 and above.
And yet the final page is actually, whilst you don't see penetration, it is quite explicit in the way that
I'm not too sure whether it's actually got penetration, but I mean it's
Does it really?
No, heavily implied.
That doesn't matter. Like the actual figure work and the shot itself is still quite explicit. So that should actually have gone into higher rate. The book a higher rating.
That shot alone should go to a higher rating. Yeah. Even if it is 16. But, I mean, even if it is 16+, even if you don't specifically see penetration, which would then make it adult only. Mm. It's implied that it is, and that should be enough.
Mm. Which does come down to, I think, the biggest problem overall with the book, not just with that scene. There is absolutely no subtlety to this book whatsoever.
Yep.
Absolutely no subtlety, no nuance, no nothing. It's superficial and it's sad.
I give this zero looks.
Okay.
We can't give negative ratings because negative doesn't make sense, so zero looks.
Yeah, it's a disgrace. But let's move on, hopefully, to something a bit better. What's next on the list? We have Red Lanterns. Okay, Red Lanterns, written by Peter Milligan, penciler Ed Baines?
Benes.
Well, there you go. Learns it every day. I liked it. It was quite good. I had I'm a Green Lantern Universe fan. I had high hopes for this to be interesting. As I've mentioned in the previous podcast, one of the comics that I'm really looking forward to is New Guardians. Green Lantern's had a bit of a slump recently, I think. I mean, Blackest Night was awesome stuff, and then it sort of tapered down from there. Never cracked, but, you know, not as good as the highs that it was. I think this is a very welcome indication that it may be returning to that high. It was an odd choice for a series to have. Let's face it, I mean, they're essentially sort of, they're basically bad guys. I mean, they just go around and they're just, you know, in full of rage. I mean, they're powered by rage, like the Green Lanterns are powered by will. So it was, when I first heard about it, I thought it was a bit of an odd choice, but they are awesome characters, and I'm glad that we're seeing some more of them. It would be a bit hard to have an entire series based around people that just basically just rage all the time and just destroy everything in their way. So they've gone for an interesting twist where Atrocitus questions his rage. So he basically, when he was first introduced as a character, awesome in the Rise of the Red Lands. Obviously, he's against the Manhunters and the Guardians and what they did to his planet and his people and all that sort of stuff. I highly recommend that you check that out. Which then eventually led to the creation of the Red Rings and the Red Lanterns themselves. But he's questioning that. He's level with rage, and he's found that now that the focus of his rage has now gone, which I won't ruin for you, go read it, awesome, what is basically is his purpose, what essentially is his role in the universe. He's very interesting, he's a multifaceted character, and I really like him. I also quite like the rest of the Red Lanterns themselves, especially the Angel Girl, please. Yeah, she's cool. So he gains a new purpose in life, and decides that rage can be focused in a new way, in a very interesting way, I think, and will be rage against injustice. And what that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, is what happens to his family, and basically his entire race, was an injustice, and he should do what he's doing now. So not only will he fight for the injustice that was perpetrated against him, he'll fight against the injustice that was perpetrated against everybody. So essentially now he's just a very, very angry Batman with a red ring, which is awesome. The artwork is very cool. It's got that sort of fancy, dynamic sort of comic art that I seem to quite like. I'm not too sure why that is, but it's easy to follow. You know exactly what's going on. The Red Lanterns themselves just look awesome. They're spewing up of blood every time they activate and all sort of stuff. It just looks really cool, and highly recommend it. I was not disappointed at all, and I gave it 4 looks.
Any book that has a double page splash of Dexter the Killer Cat as its double page opener has to be good. I don't know why, but I just love Dexter
and a bit of comedy. You know, what are you doing with my
cat? What are you doing to my cat? Say,
following it up with, you know, Atrocitus' entrance is also very cool as well.
I love the Green Lantern mythos with a passion. I've always been a big fan. And the introduction of the new Lantern Corps has been, I think, one of the best things to come out of the last Green Lantern series. I'm glad that they're expanding on that. I think the Red Lanterns is a good choice. They're very interesting characters.
Yep.
Atrocitus has been one of the absolute standouts of Green Lantern over the last couple of years. My problem, I guess, would be is just how does this work for new readers? I mean, there's no real explanation for what the different cores are about.
Yeah, but we covered that in the last podcast, though. I mean, Green Lantern has not been rebooted.
True.
I mean, it's followed directly on from War of the Lands.
True, but we were making the same comments earlier about Batman and Robin.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that that's a problem here as well.
I agree.
There's really not an introduction to the wider concept of what the Red Lantern core is and what it's about and how the different cores are connected.
Yeah.
So they're assuming a lot of prior knowledge on the part of readers. I agree, yeah, this isn't a big reboot. It isn't a big relaunch, but it is a number one and it's designed to bring in new readers. And I don't know if they've really managed to achieve that goal. I mean, I love the issue, but I love the Red Lanterns and I come to the issue with all of the prior knowledge that I need to be able to appreciate the story.
That's true. It's a very very feeble attempt to explain what's happened previously.
But Peter Milligan does a great job of characterization, especially with Atrocitus.
Yeah.
And a really good job of setting up not only Atrocitus' cause now, and what's, I'm assuming, going to be the driving force behind the book, but also the potential problems this could cause with the rest of the Red Lanterns as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I would give it 3.5 Lukes, but I'm not quite sure about its new reader friendliness.
Cool.
Well, the story didn't hold my attention enough to be able to comment on that. I just didn't find it very interesting.
Is that because you didn't have any prior knowledge of it? Is this a little bit firm what Richo was saying? Is this not a very good number one?
No, I just didn't find it very interesting. I found halfway through it, I realised that I've not really been paying any attention.
Okay.
That actually, it could be, though, that because it's dealing with a change in Atrocitus from when he had appeared earlier, and so that change is interesting to readers like us because we saw him in his earlier incarnation. So that might be part of it, maybe.
Could be. I don't know. It also could be that it was way down on my list of stuff to read. I might want to be jaded by then. Another one. Yeah, so I can't even give it a rating because it, as I say, I didn't really hold my attention enough to comment.
I've sort of been hanging, like Waldo, I've been hanging out for both this and New Guardians because the wider Green Lantern mythos has been interesting and I'm surprised it's actually taken them this long to release a book like this. I think Peter Milligan is the perfect writer for it. In the past, he's written characters who have straddled the fine line between black and white. Those who are not necessarily good guys, but not necessarily evil people as well. And I think he brings the experience that he had writing Constantine and Bad Company for 2000 AD to Red Lanterns, and Atrocitus comes across as a very interesting character. I love the opening scene, the fight with the pirates. I think that perfectly captures the concept of the core and Atrocitus himself. We get his backstory. Top notch stuff. I give this 3.5 looks.
Goodness. Coming up next, we have Richo with DC Universe Presents.
DC Universe Presents is going to be DC's showcase book, rotating creative teams, rotating characters. I assume it will be a tryout book to see how characters will sell to determine whether they're going to give them new series or miniseries. They open with Deadman in a story written by Paul Jenkins and drawn by Bernard Chang.
Yep.
It's a rather interesting issue. It's very character driven. A little bit slow. It sets up the character reasonably well. Gives a pretty interesting take on his karmic journey, which has always been part of the character's story, is that a god called Ramakrishna gives him a chance to basically redeem his former life where he was not a very likable person. This time around, though, they establish that there is a certain number of steps that he has to take on this karmic journey to reach the person that he can be. And I think that's actually quite an interesting take because in the past it's just been a little bit more random. It's, you're going back, you're doing this stuff, we don't really know how long you're going to go for before you've redeemed yourself. So that was, yeah, so it's a fairly solid opening. I feel that it probably helps to have a little bit of background into the character. But look, he was a good choice to launch this book. His profile has risen recently by his appearances in books like Brightest Day. So, but yeah, but look, it was a solid issue. It wasn't brilliant. There was nothing groundbreaking about it. The artwork was nice. Good, solid storytelling. I give it 3 Lukes.
This was actually my favourite out of all of them. I got to the end of it. Wow, I really enjoyed that one. I hadn't any prior knowledge of the characters before, but that didn't sort of hamper me at all.
Fantastic.
I was interested in the story. I liked the Quantum Leap kind of pretender quality to it. My favourite bit was when he's trying to talk to the medium, and she's just been cold reading people and not really talking to dead people, but he's going, "Hey, you're a medium, you should be able to, you should be okay with this," and she's going, "I don't want to talk to you anymore. It's just my imagination." So I really liked that bit. I thought the artwork was good. Sequences were easy to follow. I give it 4.5 Lukes.
Nice.
Cool. I've just got a couple of points. Yeah, the artwork is nice. It is easy to follow and all sort of stuff. I actually just don't find the story easy to follow. I'm a bit confused with exactly what is it that he does. So he leaps into people, possesses their bodies, and then does what? So you're given this big 2-page montage of 12 people that he's leapt into. It's like, I've been all these people, exotic and mundane, passages in time. What exactly did he do with these people? So it explains what their problems in life are, and I'll get to one of them in a second, but one of the ones that really annoy me. But what does he do while he's in them?
I think he's meant to learn from their experiences. I don't think he's meant to change anything.
So what's the point of that, learning from experience? You get any one of these characters, they're all very cliche characters. So any one of these people, you could read a book and learn about their experiences. Why do you have to jump into them? What exactly does that teach you?
The difference between reading about someone and actually being someone.
I just don't see the point to it. I just think this character is pointless in the grand scheme of things. I mean, he essentially doesn't do anything. It's all about himself. So the whole point is he starts off as a selfish jerk. But isn't that what he's doing now? He's still being a selfish jerk. He's jumping into people, experiencing their lives, basically being a voyeur into people's pain, learns a lesson. Oh, well, it's obviously not good to do whatever these people are doing, and then moves on.
He's learning empathy.
But doesn't he also state that he helps them?
Mm. Yeah, that's right. It says that he helps them. In what way? Mm. Nothing in here shows me that he's helped any of these people.
Yeah.
See, I don't think that that's actually a big issue. I mean, for me, it was a case of, he jumps into these people, he's done it in the past, and these are all people in the past, he's helped them out, and he's learnt a lesson along the way that he needs to continue his own karmic journey.
But what did
he
do?
For me, that's just... Well, for me, that's establishing who the character is. And then when the story progresses, we'll learn more about exactly specifics of helping people. But this is what he's done in the past, so I don't need to know the details of what he's done for each of these people.
Yeah, but
all
I
need
do.
To know is that yeah, he helps them... Yeah, all I need to know is that he helps them, and that's part of what his character is. And now we're going to get to the story with the stuntman.
Being
the example of that. So
if you're going to have a 2-page montage of people that I've been in, I need to know what exactly did you do. So I'll give you an example, right? Lizzie Carpenter, who was afraid of the next thing she would create.
Yeah.
What did you do to help this woman? Not be afraid of the next thing she would create? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I had no problem with that at all. It established who the character was, what he does. I don't need the details of that because the stuntman story is the one that's going to tell me those details as the issues progress.
And one of the other ones actually says to me that he actually didn't do anything. So Jerry Striggle, who would die alone, too proud to dial his son's number. Mm. So he who would die alone. So basically Dead Man jumped into this guy, did nothing, and watched this guy die alone.
And the whole idea that ultimately he didn't die alone because he had someone there with him
who would die alone.
And I'm not arguing that, I'm just throwing that there as a devil's advocate because I like playing devil's
advocate. I don't know, it's just not very clear to me. It's just, but he's not doing anything. There is no mission. The only mission I can see is that he has to save his own soul by doing nothing.
No, by helping. He helps these people.
I see no evidence of help.
He helps these people and learns the lessons he needs to learn as well to continue his own karmic journey. That came across very clearly for me in this issue. I didn't
Yeah, fair enough. Difference of opinion. Anyway, that's the main thing that annoyed me. The second thing was that yet once again in another new 52 issue, there is a half-naked chick. So it's just for some reason one of the people that he supposedly helped or whatever leapt into is a stripper who hates her daddy and is now stripping. It's like, come on. It's unnecessary.
Once again, it didn't bother me because it wasn't gratuitous.
It's like, not gratuitous, but it's just every time.
See where you're coming from. It is a cliche. There's no doubt about that.
TNA. I'm just tired of it. It's just too much. And I mean, and then next week you're going to have Voodoo, who is, you know, a stripper, and that's meant to be somehow empowering us, but we'll get to that next week.
I think you're a bit fired up by our reviews of Starfire and Catwoman, because...
Okay, all right, I've taken it a bit far, but it just wasn't necessary. Although, that being said, I did like the end part, where he's basically decided, well, I'm really not doing all that much, and so now I'm going to force a confrontation. So...
Well, perhaps
I won't say how he does it, because it's pretty cool, but
then doesn't that go... fly in the face of what you were saying earlier. You said that you didn't... He seems to have done nothing.
Yeah, he's done nothing.
Right. And now he's confronting Ramakrishna about the fact that he's done nothing, so therefore it's a story point.
No. His thing is that he's been... The comic says that he's been doing things, but doesn't show exactly what he's been doing. That's my problem.
Yeah.
No, just
how have you helped these people? I don't like it.
No, I actually take...
I gave it 2 links.
I take... Dave's side here, I would have liked to see not every single one, but more, one more at least, apart from the stuntman, that has some sort of emotional connection for the audience. I thought there's a lot of talking and telling me what's going on, but not a lot of showing. I think I like Dead Man, I like Boston Brand, I like the artwork. I think the story's a bit slow. It sort of lost me a little bit when it cut to the injured veteran. And picked up again, didn't really pick up again for me until the scene with Madame Rose. And that scene I thought was the best scene. I thought it was interesting, there was some dynamic, something was happening. I wasn't just being told a whole bunch of stuff. I was actually being shown something in the way that Boston tries to relate to people from his past. Uh-huh. And I thought that was good. And I liked the way that they showed us zipping from one body to the next, almost at the speed of light. And from then, I felt it started to get a bit interesting. The first half of the book needed to be a lot tighter, and we needed to see Boston doing something as opposed to being told about Boston doing something. I give it 2 looks.
So coming up next, we have Luke with another Bat book, Nightwing.
Okay, Nightwing is written by Kyle Higgins and is drawn by Eddie Barrows, and it's dealing with Dick Grayson's return to the Nightwing role after spending so long under the Bat Cowl. Eddie Barrows' artwork is quite nice. As we've said with quite a lot of the books, actually, the artwork in a lot of the books has been quite good. It's nice to see someone try and write Dick as being Dick again. So the differences between him and Bruce, you know, as opposed to the precise, calculating, control everything at all costs nature of Bruce Wayne, Dick's a bit more freewheeling, a bit more loose. Not to the point where he's reckless, of course, but to the point where he comes across as being a bit more human. I thought the start was a little bit slow, and there is a bit too much exposition. I wanted more with the Haley Circus, just to show a bit more of an emotional connection, and to expand on Dick's world a bit more too. We've seen Batman's world expanded upon, or at least set up in rather interesting ways in Scott Snyder's first issue of Batman, and I just wanted a little bit more for Dick. Having said that, the issue is enjoyable, and certainly the end fight scene with its revelations is quite nice to read. I give this, 3 looks.
Cool. I agree with everything you said. So I'll make it short and sweet. I also give it 3 looks.
I was very pleasantly surprised by this issue. I've never really had much of an interest in Nightwing, and I completely missed pretty much the entire time he spent as Batman. The good thing is that I don't need to have read that stuff. Mm. It just states he was Batman. He's not anymore. He's glad that the pressure of being Batman is off him, and that he can go back to being his own man. I think that was a really nice way to set the character up. I thought there was actually a good balance between the circus stuff, the introduction of the villain, the action sequences, and the character sequences. I thought they did a pretty good job of finding a good balance between the two. I actually didn't need more of the circus stuff just yet. They've set it up as a as supporting cast members and that there might be some more subplot there. That was pretty much all I needed. Gave me a good insight into Dick as a character. I thought there was a very good scene there where he's up on the trapeze and he's like, I've got to make it look like not as good as I am. I thought that was a nice touch. Yeah, and just overall, I thought this, I was very pleasantly surprised. I thought this was a good introduction to the character. There is probably a little bit too much exposition dialogue here and there, but it didn't get on my nerves too much. It didn't bog down the story or anything like that. And they were still showing me the things that I needed to see. And really, the exposition dialogue was just extrapolating on what we were seeing. So I'm going to give this 4 Lukes.
I thought as an opening issue, it's a good issue. It does everything an opening issue should do. Introduces the character as a story that opens it up to more issues. I just didn't find it all that interesting. In fact, I thought the my favourite bit in the whole book was the Big Bang Theory advert. I give it 2.5 Lukes on the basis that it's a good opening issue, but I would give it more if I was more interested in the story.
Cool. Moving along to the home stretch now, we have Richo with Mr. Terrific.
Again, Mr. Terrific by Eric Wallace and Gianluca Gugliotta.
That was me. I have no clue.
Gianluca, I think it's pronounced Gugliotta. I think.
Yeah, Gugliotta. I thought it might be. I've been a fan of Mr. Terrific since he first appeared in JSA. This is actually quite a different take on the character. It does seem to come across as a bit of a reboot, and as we know from some interviews and things, it looks like the JSA actually aren't part of this new DC universe, so that this looks like it is a reboot and a reintroduction of the character. Yeah, so this is a bit of a reboot, but I have to say I was very impressed with this issue. Michael Holt comes across as a very interesting and likable character. I understand the motivation for why he does what he does. His intelligence, his abilities, his general skill levels, all of these things are shown to me in a very good way. The book was entertaining. It introduces some new villains and things like that. So it's really achieving what a good first issue should do. Probably a little bit too much exposition. The flashback to the death of his wife does help to set up the character, but I thought it could have been done in a slightly better way. But this does introduce a potential new villain threat as well, a couple of subplots, and ends with one of the better cliffhangers in the books to date. So there was one scene that kind of detracts from the issue for me, though. We're introduced to Karen Starr, who is the love interest for Mr. Terrific, and for those in the know, is Power Girl in the pre-DC New Universe. But she has a run-in with a black woman that's kind of, it's like they're trying to make a race issue out of it, and it just seems like a very awkward and kind of slapped-in scene that just, it disrupts the flow of the book. It's almost like they're trying to say Power Girl is racist. I don't really understand what the point of the scene is at all. And it actually, I found it very annoying. Just that one page actually detracted from the whole issue for me. I would have ranked this probably 4 or maybe even 4.5 if it wasn't for that scene. But that scene drags it down a bit, so I give this 3.5 Lukes.
A whole half of a Luke just for one scene.
Absolutely. It's such a stupid scene and such an annoying scene and such a pointless scene that it loses half a point just because of that.
Okay. That's fair enough. I quite like this as well. It's and I agree that scene was silly. I do like the fact that he just seems to be having fun doing what he does.
Yeah.
And he accepts the fact that he is, like the third smartest person in the world or something like that. Yeah. It has a bit of a laugh about it, and it has a joke. And I mean, he's self-aware without being insane about it. Has a bit of fun with the villain. Yeah, it was just an enjoyable read, I thought. I did think the flashback to his dead wife could have been handled better, I suppose, but it did what it had to do. But just as a character, I do like him. I did like seeing Karen in there. That was pretty cool. And you're right, that scene with the black woman is... it seems out of place. So I'll give it 3 Lukes.
I sort of breathed a bit of a sigh of relief when I read this, because I'm a big fan of the character. Big fan of his presence in JSA, and JSA is much missed. And when they announced Mr. Terrific, was excited because he's a good character, but also a little bit nervous because I didn't want the character to be to go the way of, say, guys like Green Arrow or Starfire.
Well, he has got a full body costume on. Let's just point that
please,
out.
Please, please. Sleeveless.
Oh, sleeveless.
He's showing off the arms.
He's got a bit of muscle there.
But yes. Awesome. He is Mr. Terrific, after all.
That's right.
Yeah, no, but pleasantly surprised. It is enjoyable, and the character who I read about in JSA is still present in spite of the changes to the DCU. He's not, you know, a dark, obsessed Avenger, which they could have gone with if they'd so chosen, but he's still a bit bright and a bit happy, and as you said, you know, it likes his likes the place that he has, and, you know, doesn't mind being considered the world's third smartest man because he is still considered one of the world's smartest men.
I like the fact that not only are we told that he is one of the world's smartest men, but we're actually shown that in the way that he handles the villains as Mr. Terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yes, he's the world's smartest man. Now let's show you him being the world's smartest man.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, they could really have gone the sort of the dark Avengers sort of route with a name like Mr. Terrific.
True, but he does have the dead wife. They could have gone the Avengers.
He would have to have changed his name.
You're not going to be sporting the fair play tattoo if you're a dark Avenger.
And does anybody notice the sort of similarities to Mr. T? Mr. T, Mr. Terrific?
No, that's just you.
I don't know, I just popped in my head there. I don't know, that's weird. Does Mr. T actually stand for Mr. Terrific? We should ask. We should find out. Hit the interwebs.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyable. Give it 3.5 looks.
I didn't actually find it all that memorable until you guys started talking about it, but I agree with you about that scene with the black woman, and I found that confusing. What were they trying to say there.
It's like they're trying to make a race issue out of a book that doesn't have a race issue in it.
I didn't think they were trying to make a race issue. I thought that was stemming more from jealousy between...
Oh, that's clearly what it was.
Sure, but you get the whole, I'm a white woman, I'm a black woman.
There was clearly a point trying to be made.
Why was it necessary to point that out, though?
There was clearly a point there trying to be made, but it went completely over my head. I don't know what they were talking about. But I found the Mr. Terrific character himself likable. But, yeah, for some reason that one just didn't stick in my head. I'll give it 3. Oops.
Okay, so Richo again. We're going to stick with Richo as we move on to... One of the ones I was looking forward to, Demon Knights.
Demon Knights, written by Paul Cornell and penciled by Diogenes Neves.
Diogenes, that's an awesome name.
It is an awesome name, isn't it?
Diogenes.
Yeah, I actually think it's more Diogenes.
Diogenes.
All right, Diogenes Neves.
And is it Neves or Neves?
I'm going to go with Neves because, let's face facts, I have no idea.
Whatever it is, dude, you got an awesome name.
This is DC's basically medieval fantasy book. It's set well in the past, starring the demon, who in this incarnation is a human man called Jason Blood, who was an apprentice servant? Yeah.
Well, apprentice to
Merlin. And, you know, basically gets stuck with a demon inside him for his efforts.
That's a bit harsh.
It is a bit harsh. Teaming up with Madame Xanadu, another magical character from the DCU, who in recent times was established as actually being strongly connected with Camelot as well. Also, the third non-original character in the book is the Shining Knight, in his reimagined version as seen most recently in Grant Morrison's Seven Soldiers. And a few new characters that they've introduced. We don't really see a lot about them in this issue, but one of them is an archer riding a horse. We don't really get to see much about her. There's an Amazon, possibly an Amazon woman in there.
Just say all the archetypes are taken care of.
Yeah. Which does actually kind of illustrate what I would say would be my biggest problem with this book. The book itself is not bad, but it is a little bit all over the place.
Yeah.
It's jumping between characters. It doesn't really have a great focus on any one or two characters. I mean, we start off being, you know, in Camelot. We see the introduction of the demon and Jason Blood, and it looks like they're going to be the focus, you know, the focal point characters for this story. But then we end up sort of just jumping back and forth. We're introduced to Vandal Savage, and so then we get a little bit about him.
He's cool.
Yeah. Look, it's not a bad issue per se, but it just really lacks storytelling focus. And I have to say, I was very excited by this book. I love The Demon, love Madame Xanadu, and you know, and Paul Cornell, I've been a big fan of his work, both on Doctor Who episodes that he's written and his previous work on things like Captain Britain. But I've got to say, this issue was a little disappointing for me.
Is this the issue that he actually mentions Doctor Who?
No, that was Mr. Trivik.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, so this issue was a little bit little disappointing for me. It's not so bad that I'm not going to sort of pick up the next couple of issues just to see where it is going. But it really does lack focus. Look, I'm going to give it 2.5 Lukes.
The essential problem is that Paul Cornell has brought, you know, more of a television type attempt to write comic books. Yeah. So that's sort of, you know, we need to jam pack everything into as little time as we can, you know, to introduce characters and whatnot, which works fine, and characters and set up situations works fine in a television script, because you've got interaction between actors and things to carry that as well. But in this, it needed, as Richard's pointed out, it needed Jason Blood and the Demon to be the real focal point and have everything bounce off them. I like the scenes with Vandal Savage. I think Vandal Savage is a cool character anyway.
Yeah.
I thought, and it was nice to see Vandal Savage portrayed as something other than a bad guy for a change. You know, he's a bit jovial, getting on with the others. And
sharing ale with them at the local tavern.
Sharing ale with that, I really liked that. That was a surprise. I didn't mind the artwork, but yeah, it is a bit disappointing. It needed a tighter focus, and it needed resonance. Nothing really resonated with me in the issue itself. It's sort of like all this stuff is just there, but I had no connection to it. I give this 2 Lukes.
Fair enough. I agree. Its main problem is it's just lacks cohesion. It seems like a whole lot of cool moments slapped together with no real sort of overarching plot sort of stuff. I really like the scene where Xanadu jumps in after Excalibur.
Hmm.
I was like, you know, stop this, up she goes. I like the scene where Jason Blood, you know, gets infused with Etrogen, although it's kind of harsh for the poor man. I liked Vandal Savage. I liked the little demon baby. You know, it's just a whole bunch of stuff. A lot of, you know, cool little scenes. The is it a boy, is it a girl? Shiny knights and stuff. Who really knows?
There's a lot of subplot here.
Yeah.
But without the focus of an actual plot to go with the subplots.
Yeah. Etrogen and Xanadu in a relationship. I mean, there's a lot happening, but it's very easy to lose track.
Yeah.
And it does look very pretty, and I totally agree with Luke in that it should have basically just been Etrogen going around and amassing the group as he goes.
Yes. As I said, it's a television approach to writing comics as opposed to a comic approach to writing comics.
Cool, but I'm still going to stick with it though, because I like, you know, I like my fantasy. I'm going to keep pushing for more fantasy on the show.
And the characters are good as well. You know,
and Etrogen as a warrior, running around as a warrior with a big sword. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
So I'll still give it. I'll give it 2.5 Lukes.
I am coming at it brand new, so I didn't really know what was going on, and it's like a focus made it hard to follow, and I just could put this, I have to admit, this was way down the list of the stuff that I read, so by this point I was feeling a bit jaded and I just couldn't be bothered concentrating and getting through it. I just had lost interest, so I can't really give this one a rating either. I agree with Luke. If it had a better focus, it may have developed into, it needed to have a story within the issue.
And that's precisely what I liked.
Yeah, and it was just basically a bunch of cool things slapped together, and without having any prior knowledge, I didn't know what was going on.
And especially since it is probably one of the harder sell books. I mean, it's a fantasy book as opposed to a superhero book. It features, you know, the demon is the primary character, and you know, he's not exactly the most popular character as much as I might love him. So, yeah, it really needed a very strong first issue, and it just didn't deliver that.
Yeah, it fails as a first issue.
You like to say that, don't you? It fails.
I think it's great. I agree. Fails as a first issue.
Okay, Richo again with Deathstroke.
That's right, I'm a popular guy. Deathstroke is basically about a mercenary killer, not a very nice guy, and yeah, that's pretty much all I could say about that. This issue was nothing. It really was just, yeah, there he is. He's a killer. Okay, I got that. Now let's show him doing some killing. There's a there's a slight twist, one page moment towards the end of the book that tells you a lot about who the character is. My biggest problem is that now that I understand who the character is, I just don't find him very interesting. Deathstroke for me has always worked well as a villain who gets occasional use, but having an entire series centered around him, it just doesn't do it for me at all. They've tried this once before, and that series didn't really work for me either. Look, I'll give it two Lukes, but it really is just there. I will say Joe Bennett's artwork is very nice, but yeah, the story just didn't grab me at all.
I actually have no memory of this one whatsoever. It was actually, we were talking about it last night, and I said, I don't recall this one. I remember the title, but it actually made no impression on me whatsoever.
That's good. That actually justifies my belief in the book, so thank you for that.
Well, once again,
that was another non-rating for me, sorry.
Okay, cool. Once again, we're not going to have consensus, because I actually quite enjoyed it. I'm a simple man with simple tastes. I really love the cover. I think the cover is excellent.
Simon Bisley.
Nothing wrong with Ben Bisley.
Yeah, you got to love Simon Bisley drawing over the top guys with big weapons in their hands.
Yeah, and I just... And the interior art is also quite good. And I just found it to be... It's a very simple story. I mean, it doesn't pretend to be anything that it's not. And it's just an entertaining read. I don't know, I feel bad because everybody's looking at me strange, but it's...
I'm about to make you feel a whole lot worse.
And the end bit was quite cool, but although, you know, quite obvious from the start why that was all going to happen, but it's just, I mean, it's overall, it was inoffensive and, entertaining. I wasn't bored.
Once again, calling it inoffensive also proves my point. It's like saying, look, I wasn't so totally disgusted by this that I have to get on my soapbox.
It didn't blow me away. I mean, I won't continue reading it. but I didn't hate it, so it was okay. I mean, it passed the time, so it wasn't a chore. So I'll give it three looks.
Reading this, I'm reminded of the quote from Bernard Black in Black Books when he's recommending a book to a customer. You'll like this. It's dreadful, but it's really quite short. and that was my reaction. I'm giving this one look because it really was short, but there was nothing in it. There was no interesting characterization. Joe Bennett's artwork is good, and I like Joe Bennett as an artist, but really he needed a better script. Deathstroke himself is not particularly interesting. The only good point comes at the end, where something happens, as opposed to 21 pages of, you know, set up with lots and lots of being told about how good Deathstroke is, about, you know, how cool and crazy and how, you know, sort of hip the team that is with are. How ponderous Christoph is. This is bland. Okay?
After I first read it, I think I described it to you as the all-exposition issue of Deathstroke.
I love the fact that we have different opinions.
It's good. So but it's as you said, it's inoffensive, but there's nothing else going for it.
I'm not going to keep reading it.
But you sit there reading surely the editorial when I got the script would have just gone,
give us something more interesting.
What?
Yeah.
You call this a first issue?
What? where's the story?
Get out the red pencil. Scrap this page.
The first and last page. You don't need to know anything else.
So what are the other 18 pages for?
Fine, you ready? Let's move on.
One look.
Okay,
cool. Because it's short.
You're actually going to have the next two are going to be both Lukes, so two in a row.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have the two Legion books, starting with Legion Lost.
Legion Lost is written by Fabian Nicieza and illustrated by Pete Woods, and it deals with a group of Legionnaires tracking a bad guy through time back to our present day. Just a select group who, through the course of the story, find themselves trapped with no discernible way of getting home. Look, it's an okay first issue. There's nothing particularly brilliant about it. I think Pete Woods has drawn better in the past. It features some fan favorite Legionnaires like Wildfire, Timberwolf, Dawnstar, Tellus, but they've been handled better in the past. It's an okay read. It's nothing spectacular. I give this two looks.
I actually have no interest in the Legion of any kind. I didn't like. I've never liked any Legion story I've ever read. So I don't know what that says, but and there's been some good stuff. So yeah. But for some reason, I just there's something about the Legion that really irked me, and I'm not too sure why that is. So I come to this issue not expecting to be all that impressed, and you know, was entertained.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, it passed the time. Yeah. And it didn't annoy me, but just my utter disregard for these characters. I didn't care. It was very obvious that they were going to be trapped because of course Legion lost, so it's not hard. I just didn't care. You know what I mean? And it was just a nothing book. And the artwork, the artwork's fine. It does what it does.
It didn't set up why I should, as you say, you didn't care.
Yeah.
And it didn't actually establish any emotional connection to the characters. I like quite a lot of the characters. I like Wildfire. I like Dawnstar. Big fan of Talos and Timberwolf, but nothing in the story itself meant why should I actually be interested in what they're doing.
Well, there's a throwaway thing where one of them says that I'm now never going to see my wife or husband again. I'm not too sure which one it is again, but it's yeah, well, whatever. It's like my heart doesn't bleed for you, so I give it 1.5 looks.
I am a bit of a Legion fan. I'm not the Legion fan that Luke is, but I do quite like the team. I found that, and I find this with a lot of Nicias' team book writing, it often takes him several issues to really get a feel for the characters he's writing, and I think that that's most evident in this book. There's, as you say, there's not a lot here to, a lot of characterization here to really hook me. Even though I'm a fan of these characters, they just seem very bland in this story. And, yeah, the premise behind the book is okay, but not really enough to hook me just yet. So, yeah, look, I'd probably give it 2 Lukes, but it really is just there. There's not much to it. I was really kind of hoping for something a bit more from Nicias because he has written some very good team books in the past, but unfortunately this wasn't one of them.
I just found there's too much going on. It wasn't very coherent. I just lost interest. So it's another non-rating for me. That's a fail as a first issue.
Fail!
I don't know what the Legion is. Before I read the book, and I still don't know what the Legion is.
Very cool. Okay, so the other, there were actually 2 Legion books, so the other one that came out was Legion of Superheroes.
And sort of just to go off Crystal's point there, at no point does this actually catch you up on, does either book catch you up on what the Legion of Superheroes is. Legion of Superheroes, the title proper, is written by Paul Levitz and illustrated by Francis Portella. And I'll go to Portella's artwork first, because the last incarnation of the Legion was illustrated by Sinner. And I think the Sinnoh did a very good job on the Last Legion series, and I think Francis Portella does a very good job as well without being derivative. There's a slightly darker hue to his artwork, yet at all times I know who all the characters are. His figure work and his framing is quite nice, and he tells a pretty good story. Paul Levitz, of course, wrote the last incarnation, and really this is just a follow-on from that storyline. I enjoyed the issue, but then I enjoy it as just a follow-on from the Legion itself. For new people, it is going to get confusing because it does talk about elements, and I'm not going to give away those elements. It does talk about elements that occur in the very last issue itself. And so going from that to this is going to seem a bit confusing. This is, I give this 3 looks. Enjoyable, solid. I'm a huge Legion fan and look forward to the rest of the series. I really enjoyed what Paul Levitz has been doing with the Legion. He's gotten the Legion back on track in terms of where they're at. I love the inclusion of the new characters like Dragonwing, who was previously in the Legion Academy. And yes, greatly looking forward to the rest of the series. Not a good one for new readers.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, once again, it's their inability to have a number one that is actually a number one. I mean, it clearly references what has happened in the past. Yeah. It even references Flashpoint.
Mm.
Let's face facts. This isn't, despite the number on the cover, this isn't issue one. This is issue, whatever they're up to, 17 or whatever, in the old series.
And it's just Legion. Exactly the same as what I said to the last one. I just have no interest whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It was mildly entertaining, so I'll give it 1 look.
Paul Levitz writing the Legion of Superheroes is just so familiar. It's wonderful to see for an old time Legion reader. He wrote the book first in the early 80s and had one of the absolute seminal runs on the book. And it's like he hasn't missed a beat when he returned recently. The characters just feel and sound exactly the way that I remember them. And look, that's fantastic for me. The last relaunch, the one that was only a couple of years old, was absolutely fantastic. This really is just a continuation of that. So it's continuing on its way very nicely, but the problem is that it's continuing on its way. As you guys have said, this is not a first issue at all. It doesn't tell you who the Legion are, what they're about. It's not new reader friendly at all. It's like DC have just accepted that new readers aren't going to pick up this book, so they're just going to appeal to the people that were already reading it. And to be fair, it was a hit book. It was actually a bit of a surprise hit from all accounts. But if you're also attracting new readers, this is not the way to do it. You know, you want those people that come in not just to buy Legion because they've been buying it, but, you know, if they're coming in for Batman or if they're coming in for Action or whatever other title, you want them to go, hey, here's another new number one, Legion of Superheroes, let's check it out. And as Crystal would say, this fails as a first issue.
Which is probably why they've got the miniseries coming out that details the origin of, you know, the Knight of Federation planets.
But if you're going to release the miniseries anyway,
yeah,
why not just make that issue one?
That's actually interesting. Is there any DC titles that haven't got a new number one? Is there any of them not being rebooted?
Zatanna, Doom Patrol.
So Zatanna and Doom Patrol are continuing on.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, there is not a single series. Yeah. Other than Vertigo stuff and the kids' books.
Yeah.
Like Tiny Titans.
And so clearly they only gave this a number one.
Because everything's got a number one. But really, if they're going to do the origin story, why not do the origin story in the first four issues or however long the miniseries is?
Yeah.
Like what they're doing with Justice League. And then at least you've established who the Legion are, and then you can jump to the present.
So that explains why Batman and Robin has a new number one. It's just because it does.
That's why Batman the Dark Knight has a new number one, even though they'd only published four issues to date anyway.
Yeah, so it's...
Yeah, everything gets the number one.
You can pretty much insert the same comics for the last one as for this one.
Yeah.
Okay, coming up next is Grifter. Okay, so Grifter is written by Edmondson and penciled by Cafu. Another cool name. It is the attempt to integrate another Wildstorm character into the DC universe, now that they're both part of the same universe. It mixes up his origin in order to incorporate into the DC universe, and I think it does a pretty good job. I came into this not expecting much. I didn't care about Grifter as a character in the Wildstorm universe, and he was just another dude with guns, you know, trying to be cool, just like everything else in the Wildcats was. Another thing, that's just a slightly off topic, but Wildcat stood for a covert action team. They were never covert. They're always blowing stuff up everywhere. The Wildcats sucked.
Yeah, anyway, if you're going to be a covert team, you're not going to be running around in bright, shiny costumes all the time.
Just terrible. Anyway, moving on. So Grifter, yeah, so like I said, wasn't that big of a fan to start off with. I mean, he was basically just, I don't know, he was boring. But this actually is pretty cool. Just like the Resurrection Man comic, it starts off with an incident on a plane. It's slightly different, where they believe that Cole is in fact a terrorist himself, and away it goes from there. It then goes into a bit of flashback into explain why he got into that. I've always been a bit of a sucker for that. It's like, and here's how we got to this point, and previously on, and all that sort of stuff. I don't know, I like that sort of stuff, I'm not too sure why. The artwork is quite cool. It's not too flashy. I mean, it's a lot of people would just call it serviceable, but it does what it has to do, in my opinion. It's very clear who these people are. It strikes me a bit as Gary Frank-like, which is not a bad thing. So it's pretty cool. Like I said, they've changed his origin. They've found a very interesting way to incorporate what I believe will eventually be revealed to be the Daemonites. But I could be wrong, and that's not a spoiler, because I could be wrong. Who knows? And so essentially you have Grifter, who actually in this incarnation is a Grifter, funnily enough, which is awesome. And he has his voices in his head, and he doesn't know whether he's going crazy or not. And then, of course, he becomes Grifter. Like I said, it doesn't blow you away, but it's a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I personally thought it was going to be like a Green Arrow sort of deal, but I quite enjoy it, and it entertained me. Although, to be, you know, I both Suicide Squad and and Deathstroke entertained me, and I've been taken to town, so who knows. be interested to see what you guys think. I gave it 3.5 looks.
There was a couple of interesting things in this issue, but I also had a few problems with it as well. They've done a decent job of introducing the character in that, yes, I understand he's a grifter. They've set up a nice mystery for him. He's missing 17 hours of his life. He doesn't understand what's going on, so there's a little bit of a hook there. I don't find any reason why I want to read about the character, though. I mean, yes, they've established he was a grifter. They've given me this 17-hour mystery. But as a character, he's just not very interesting. Yeah, the other thing that was a little bit, I guess, bizarre and confusing is that he grabs a mask while he's running away to wipe blood off.
I mean, it's not even clearly a mask, it's just like a rag.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to tell that it was a mask, and you had to look very carefully to see that he's grabbed a voodoo magic mask. And then at the end, when he's, you know, still suffering and he's wiping away the blood from his face and everything, he then just puts the mask on. But there's no real reason why he would do that or what's going on in his head. Yeah, it's just like,
weird.
Oh, I'm wiping myself with a mask. Better tie up the mask. Yeah, that just seemed a bit bizarre and a bit, I guess, random. It actually, strangely enough, creates a little bit of a problem with my suspension of disbelief. Which, you know, in comic terms, really, suspension of disbelief, you've just got to go with it, you know. You've got to accept that the guy that puts on the glasses looks completely different to the guy when he takes the glasses off. But, I don't know, this one just stretched that for me a little bit. So, I'll give the book 2 Lukes. But it hasn't convinced me to keep reading from this point onwards.
I've had an interesting premise, but it didn't really hold my interest. But I enjoyed the artwork. I thought it was nice, clear, uncluttered, nicely coloured, nicely rendered artwork. Mm-hmm. The story itself didn't hold much interest for me, so I give it 2.5 books.
I thought the storyline was unclear. Starting off on the plane, going off to then falling out of the plane, cutting mid-fall, Trevor was doing the con job, and then sort of jumping backwards and forwards to where his girlfriend was, back to the plane, then back to his girlfriend.
I don't think it was his girlfriend.
Well, his partner. But I thought that was really the clarity of what was going on was not as strong as it should have been.
Okay.
And
I didn't have any trouble following it, but I could see that
it could have been more. Yeah.
Yeah.
The flow. What I'm saying is that the flow from scene to scene could have been a lot stronger. Never been a huge fan of Wildcats or Grifter. He's always just a character who sort of looked kind of cool, but not really been very interesting. And I really didn't think that was different here. It's nice that he's actually a grifter as opposed to just being a guy with guns. And they're trying to give him a little bit more backstory and, as I said, the mystery of the 17 hours, but nothing there to make me go, yes, I must read more. 2 Lukes.
Awesome. Moving on. Next up, we have Richo with Frankenstein, Agent of Shade.
Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. Yet another example of difficult names to pronounce. This book is written by Jeff Lemire and penciled by Alberto Ponticelli. I'm going to go with Ponticelli.
Yeah, Alberto. Sounds
about right. Alberto, if your name's not Ponticelli, I apologise in advance.
It is a cool name.
It is a very cool name. The premise behind this book, Frankenstein's monster goes out monster hunting. And I've got to say, I think that's kind of cool.
It is awesome.
This book has a Hellboy BPRD kind of feel to it. He's part of an organization called Shade, which is run by an elderly Japanese man now inhabiting the body of a Japanese schoolgirl.
Father Time or something, isn't
it? Father Time, yeah. Their headquarters is in a sphere floating through New York that everybody shrinks down to get inside because they have the Atom working for them who makes things shrink. The team that he works with consists of a whole bunch of other monsters, all pretty much based on the classic Universal monsters. They're called the Creature Commandos, and they're an updated version of the World War II weird war stories characters. Mm. Yeah, they're kind of cool. We even have the Bride of Frankenstein in this one, who basically runs off by herself to do missions. And there's the suggestion that there's a... few problems between Frankenstein and his bride, but that's not shown yet because, you know, we've got to get to the monster hunting. I gotta say, this was entertaining. It was a lot of fun. It's not a brilliant story. It's not groundbreaking or anything, but I really enjoyed, you know, there's a lot of big, silly, crazy ideas in this book. Frankenstein himself, I think, is really nicely characterized. You don't learn a lot about him, but I learned enough to sort of keep me entertained and to get me through the book. As I said, it's very Hellboy-like, but I don't think that's a bad thing at all. And I'm going to give this 3 Lukes.
Cool. I think you're totally right. I've hit the mark with the Hellboy reference. It's about as close to Hellboy BRPD as DC is going to get.
Yep.
And you're right, that's not a bad thing because that comic is brilliant. I loved the Creature Commandos. I really liked the way that the characters were introduced with Frankenstein accessing the Shade databanks.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. The headquarters is magnificent. It's floating around in the air.
It's one of those headquarters that you think, why don't they do that more often? Given the big bizarre nature of technology in superhero comics, why don't people have more bizarre headquarters from time to time?
It makes the Watchtower look like a public toilet. It's unbelievable. And I just had a lot of fun reading it. I mean, it wasn't as Hellboy. It wasn't Hellboy quality, but they tried. And I'm really interested to see just what is the deal between Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster and his bride. And she's awesome. Multi-limbed, you know, gun, weapon in each hand. A very Carly sort of deal. And I'm intrigued, and I definitely will be keep reading. I gave it 3.5 looks.
Jeff Lemire is on a bit of a roll. Animal Man was pretty good. This is also pretty good. But it's nice to see that he's trying to write 2 different horror books. This one's going for more of the adventure monster hunter, whereas Animal Man is actually more ingrained psychological horror. Yep, as has been said, a lot of fun. I really like Ponticelli's artwork. Has a nice sort of rough feel without actually feeling underdone. The Creature Commandos are very nicely handled characters, particularly the Gilman equivalent, Dr. Nina Mazursky.
Yeah.
I think she's actually quite fascinating. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, more stuff done with her over the coming issues. Really enjoyable. 3.5 looks.
I thought it was a bit of fun, but I don't think it'll be picking up again. I thought that some of the artwork was a bit cluttered in places. Yeah, it's just down to personal taste. I'd give it 2.5 books. It's just not really my cup of tea.
Cool. All right, so to finish stuff, we'll have the last 2 from this batch, which are both Green Lantern titles. They'll be covered by myself. Green Lantern and Green Lantern Core. Starting off with Green Lantern, we have writer Geoff Johns, who has basically been steering not only the Green Lantern universe for the last couple of years, but is now also steering the DC universe. With pencils by Doug Mankey. I'm a big fan of Doug Mankey's artwork. I just think it's awesome stuff. It's easy to follow. It also has a sort of a slightly Gary Frank sort of deal to it, which, I don't know, it just works for me. I mean, you just know instantly what's going on. I think he's a good storyteller, and the only problem I have with him is whenever somebody smiles, it just looks incredibly creepy. I don't know what the deal is there. Yeah, there's one particular panel, but it's basically, as long as if you're an alien and you smile, it's all good, but if you're a human and you smile, my God, dude, show some gum. It's odd. But other than that, he's awesome, and his creature designs are cool, and he's perfectly suited to Green Lantern. The story, as we've mentioned multiple times in these reviews, but it's not a number one. It doesn't reboot anything. Green Lantern Universe hasn't been rebooted. It follows directly on from the War of the Lanterns and all that sort of New Guardians and all that sort of stuff. So Hal Jordan is not a Green Lantern anymore. He's got no job. He's got no money. He strikes out with Carol yet again. he has no clue. Carol's no longer a Star Sapphire, or at least hasn't been for quite a while. So the actual focus of the issue is on Sinestro, which to me is not a bad thing because Sinestro is freaking awesome. Sinestro has been chosen to be a Green Lantern. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's pretty amazing stuff, and I think handled quite well. I mean, it's
just about everybody thinks what is going on. And I actually mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast itself, but I actually mentioned to the NCP crew quite a few weeks back, but why has nobody done a story where the ring got it wrong and got it wrong on purpose? And I would be very pleased if this was that story. So if the ring actually, apparently the ring never makes a mistake. So if the ring has intentionally made a mistake, that would be mad. Probably won't turn out to be that way. It'll just be because Sinestro has learnt the error of his ways. But hey, who knows? I mean, they've always firmly established that Sinestro does what he does because he thinks he's right. And that's so you can't necessarily tell that to say that he's wrong. It's just wrong with our moral standpoint. So anyway, we'll see how it progresses. But I will indeed keep reading. It's a return to form for Geoff Johns, in my opinion. So it's looking good for the future of the Green Lantern books. And I give it 3.5 looks.
I have to completely disagree with you on this one.
Oh, yet again.
My first reaction upon reading this issue was, DC and Geoff Johns, what the hell are you doing? Now, first of all, this has nothing to do with Sinestro becoming a Green Lantern. That is an absolutely awesome idea. I love Sinestro, and I cannot wait to see how this story pans out. My problem is, they weren't telling that story. There was a couple of pages of Sinestro here and there, and that's really what the focal point of this issue should be, because that's the really fascinating part of what's happened in the past in Green Lantern and what was set up at the end of the War of the Lanterns.
Yep.
But then they spend all their time telling me that Hal Jordan is a loser, that he can't get a job. You know, I mean, if I wanted that, I'd be watching, you know, The Wrestler or something. If I wanted that slice of life comic, you know, then I'd be going for that. I love Green Lantern. It is my single favourite, you know, DC mythos. I want big space adventures. I want it tempered with a little bit of, you know, of Earthbound stuff as well. But you've set up Sinestro, one of the best characters in the Green Lantern universe, as a Green Lantern all of a sudden, and then you don't really bother to tell me that story. You give me a few pages and that's it. Now,
it fails as a number one.
I would have taken, well, okay, it fails as a number one because, like a lot of the other failures as a number one, it's really just following on from what's already happened. But I would have actually liked for Hal Jordan to actually be removed for a while.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
Create a mystery. Where is Hal Jordan?
Yep.
And focus on Sinestro. This is such a big event in the history of the Green Lantern Corps. Why aren't you telling me that story? You know, I don't really care that Hal Jordan's on Earth and can't get a job and is, you know, bowing out with Carol again. So, look, I thought the artwork was good. The pacing was completely wrong. The Hal Jordan scenes actually stopped being about drama and ended up being about melodrama, and bad melodrama at that. Look, I'm going to continue reading because I love Green Lantern and I'm sure that Geoff Johns will pull it together. I actually really liked the New Guardians story, and I thought that War of the Green Lanterns ended very well. I'm going to continue. I'm sure he'll pull something good out of this, but this was not the first issue that I wanted. I wanted something a lot more impressive and special than this one, so I'll give it 2 looks.
Yeah, I've kind of got to agree with Richo.
I only gave it 3.5. I didn't even say it was genius.
We're not picking on you.
I've been slammed this podcast.
Just
calm down, fanboy. Okay. I, too, am a big Green Lantern fan. And, look, I didn't mind the Hal Carroll stuff, because Hal is the main character. I agree, it would have been more interesting to have Where is Hal Jordan, but let's face it, they're not going to get rid of Hal. But I certainly
which is a shame, because it's called Green Lantern, it's not called Hal Jordan.
Yeah, no.
But it's a very safe approach,
yeah.
And you know, a lot of the relaunch books, the ones that haven't been safe, have been the ones that have impressed.
Mm. But I certainly wanted to see more of Sinestro as a Green Lantern. I didn't really care that he was just spying on the Sinestro Corps on Korriga. I actually wanted to see him go around the galaxy and see him actually try and be a Green Lantern again. If that's what the story is about, if that's what the whole purpose of him having the ring is about, then I want to see him actually do that, and see him put in positions where we see whether he will do the right thing or whether his innate nature will take over and he will construct him. That will happen probably more throughout the storyline as it progresses over the next 6 to 12 issues. But I wanted more of that in this issue.
Yeah. Now that the Rings can kill, it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
He won't need to be a yellow knight anymore. I mean, he'll
and he does
be a green
certainly,
and still do what he does.
And speaking of killing, he certainly... He does a very interesting job of killing one of the yellow ladies.
Yeah, he takes him to town. It's awesome.
I also think that, much like my problem with Supergirl, I think that this issue's, the final page sort of cliffhanger in this issue has jumped the gun a bit.
Yeah, yeah. And that was...
And that comes back to the point that you were
making. Yeah, you're right.
You know, I don't think they should have pulled the trigger on this one as quickly as
they
have.
I think that was my first reaction when I read the end of the issue was, that's too soon.
Yeah.
Without giving it away, it's too soon. I want that to happen, you know, maybe issues 2 or 3, not now. I think Doug Mankey's artwork is good. Not as strong as it normally is.
Yeah.
I think in a certain couple of places, particularly that last page, it's not as crisp as it normally is. Having said that, it's okay. I give it 2.5. Looks.
This is another one that's not really my cup of tea, but I pretty much agree with what's been said. It's not a number one issue. I didn't have any trouble following it because of that reason, but I do feel like there's been a lot of story that's come beforehand that I don't know about. So, yeah, it's not an introduction to the universe. It's sort of smack in the middle of it.
Mm.
I give it 2.5.
And that brings us to our final comic, another Green Lantern title, Green Lantern Core. It's by Peter J. Tomasi and Fernando Passerin. It deals with the two Green Lanterns that are from the Earth sector, so like I said before, Stuart and Gardner, you know, what they get up to when they're not lanterns, basically, so they have to have day jobs and stuff like that. The stuff with them was, you know, it did what it had to do, I suppose. I mean, it was good to see Gardner, the bit where everybody's, they don't have any secret identities, so everybody knows that they are, in fact, Green Lanterns, and having a group of people, you know, pester him for autographs and stuff like that while he's waiting for a job interview, I thought was, you know, it was entertaining. It's nothing that hasn't been done before, but it was okay. It was good to see that he didn't blow his top, which is excellent, which is, you know, what old school Gardner probably would have done. And the bit with Stuart and the builder contractors went on for far too long. That was true to Stuart's character, but I mean, he made his point, and it went on for like 2 pages extra than I thought it should have done. I really like the start of the story. I don't want to give too much away, but it shows some core members having a bit of a confrontation, and I really, really liked it. It was visceral. It was dynamic. I just enjoyed it. I just don't have to say much more than that. The artwork is pretty good. It has a couple of shots close up of people's faces that don't quite work. But other than that, yeah, it does what it has to do. It was enjoyable. Story-wise, though, I'm pretty interested to see the continuing story. It introduces a big bad, but doesn't exactly tell you who it is. But it's the big bad's capable of taking out entire planets, and does so just to prove a point, which is pretty cool. Enjoyed it. Roughly the same as Green Lantern, maybe a little less. I'm not really that big a fan of Gardner and Stuart as characters, to be honest with you. But to be honest, I'm not really that big of a fan of Jordan either. I actually prefer Kyle. So there you go. Controversy.
You're a monster.
I'm going to go with 3 loops.
I actually am going to have to disagree with you a little bit again. I thought that this was a substantially better issue than Green Lantern number one.
I should just not review.
And B, that it does... yeah. And B, it does... It follows a similar sort of pattern to Green Lantern, but does it in a much more interesting way. Obviously, you know, we're introduced... First of all, it introduces the big subplot for the issue. It lets us know that something major is happening early on. And then, of course, at the end of the issue, we get the big, you know, cliffhanger ending. So they set up the subplot really nicely. We know that there's a major villain that they're going to be facing. We don't know much about him yet, so there's a good bit of mystery. And I really like that approach. I think that it, much like this, the Hal Jordan scenes in Green Lantern, this also goes for, you know, what do the Green Lanterns do when they're, you know, when they're not being Green Lanterns? And but I think these scenes are more interesting.
Hmm.
They tell us a lot about who the characters are. We understand that John Stewart has a very strong sense of moral responsibility. That comes across really nicely in that scene. I actually didn't think it was too long. Because it also shows us his methodology in dealing with these kind of situations as well. First, he tries to talk it through with them. Then he tries to illustrate the point for them. And then he moves on afterwards and quits. So it shows us that he is very methodical in his approach. And, you know, as an architect, which he's established as being, I think it's a nice way of showing you the character's psychology. Yeah, I didn't... There were a couple of pacing issues with this one. But they weren't too obvious. And as I said, it actually... This hooked me a lot better than Green Lantern did. I'm interested in the big mystery. I like the characterization. It's still assuming that you have a knowledge of the past. You know, when they talk about Kyle, that you know who Kyle is. But I think it does a much better job of introducing you to its core characters and its core concepts than Green Lantern does. And I give it 3.5 Lukes.
I sort of take your point, Dave, that where we see Gardner and Stewart in their real life, their real world identities, probably has gone for a bit too long. More because they happen back to back, I think, than anything else. If they'd broken it up, they actually wouldn't have seemed too long. They would have been able to stand alone as scenes. The issue for me certainly flies once we get to the bit where the planet Nero is destroyed, and we get that nice scene with Gardner and Stewart sitting on the satellite talking about how hard it is for them. That's where the human stuff, and you couldn't have that scene without the two scenes with them in their respective civilian identities, but those two civilian identities should have been broken up. I love Fernando Pastorin's artwork. I was a big fan of his run on Emerald Warriors, also written by Pete DeMarcy. I love the dialogue and the interplay between Guy Gardner and Selak. I'm looking forward to seeing more of the new core members that have been introduced here, like Sheriff Marden and Vandor. And on a side note, I also really appreciate the fact that Peter J. Tomasi is a fan of Carl Sagan's documentary Cosmos, because he actually uses some of the dialogue from Cosmos in the planetarium sequence that Guy Gardner is.
That's cool.
I just thought that was nice. It was a nice little aside that I appreciated. Top notch issue all up. 3 Lukes.
Another one that wasn't really my cup of tea. A non-rating from me.
A non-rating. Okay,
didn't
cool.
care enough about it to give it a rating one way or the other.
Well, there you go. That was huge. Thank you for sticking with it. I hope that it was informative and entertaining. We had fun. We'll complete the coverage of the new 52 in the next podcast when we have the last week of releases, and I'm really looking forward to it.